Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. It's Tuesday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Action 80 star Colton Stone, producing and engineering and contributing, can join us today on Hail Varsity. Plenty of room for you. Can tap the line, Schilling Bridge Court, can tap house, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Those ways to dial us up. Can get a hold of us on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio. Can email the show, Chris, at HailVarsity.com. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and magazine, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Get his thoughts on this upcoming weekend of college football. Get his take on Nebraska. Get his take on the Irish. Get his take on TCU, Iowa State. You know, there's so many awesome games during the afternoon Saturday. You won't have to worry about flipping over from Purdue, Nebraska. A slew of 2:30 kicks in hour two. 1 hour from now, Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet. What's going on in Michigan? What's going to go on in West Lafayette? And a little college football playoff question. We'll check in with Rick Pizzo. We are efforting Alan Pinkett to the Notre Dame Radio Network. That is not looking good. So Alan Pinkett, perhaps later on this week. Because I know you hate Notre Dame, or you love to hate Notre Dame. I want to figure out how they're not 4-8 this year, because they were supposed to be. That's right. You hope for a couple of things every year. You hope for a 10-win Husker football season. You hope for a 3-9 or 4-8 Notre Dame season. Or you hope for bad things to happen to teams that have caused you pain, namely Oklahoma or Miami. It's happening to Florida State. We'll dive into kind of the reload mentality your blue blood fan base's demand of your head coach. We'll get into some World Series talk. This is the first World Series in a long time. I mean, last year was pretty cool with Chicago. So last year was there. And the Royals. So the last 2 years, the World Series was on your mind locally. Now the Dodgers and Astros, non-local, but some superstars. So we'll give a bit of a World Series preview. Don't forget Tuesday trivia coming up at 5:40 with your good friends at Applebee's. 466-3776-800-825-5865. Here's what I'm wondering here to start things off. When it comes to Nebraska-Purdue, we can get into the mindset angle. We can get into the execution side of things. We can get into the passion. We can get into the want-to. We can get into the noise, the future of this coaching staff. We can get into guys that you'd like to see where. And I mean, there's 100 different things. And to be honest with you, all of that won't go away after one game Saturday night. But you can turn the volume down a bit with a win, with a good effort. And right now, we mentioned the point spread yesterday. It has dropped a point to -5.5. Some of you are of the belief that Nebraska should never, ever, ever be underdogged to a program, Drew Brees or not, like Purdue. And my big question here moving forward, a couple of them with this Nebraska team and this game on Saturday night, is there a glue guy for this Nebraska football team on each side of the ball? Is there a guy on offense? Is there a guy on defense? Is there a senior? Is there a guy that's a sophomore? I don't care. That's respected enough and cares enough in that locker room to stand up, say stop the madness, and pull guys forward against a list of winnable games. You'll never convince me Nebraska's bad enough to lose out, to only win one game, to win maybe two games. No, you won't convince me dude for dude when you line up on the field that aside from Penn State, that the games that they have scheduled the rest of this season aren't winnable. And, I mean, Iowa's kind of in their own little category. Just they're reeling a bit, but they can also play very well. My respect for Iowa has grown, forgive me. But it's there. They like to bludgeon people, and they've done it twice to Nebraska. So, what's going to happen here Saturday night? What's the glue guy on offense and defense going to do? And I think that you want to see wins, yes. You want to see wins of substance, absolutely. But you also want to see business taken care of that are those taken for granted. And you have nothing, and I know you don't, take wins anymore for granted. That's kind of where you're at as a program. And I'm anxious to see if it gets flipped around, and if it gets flipped around by guys on the football team. Coaches can kind of chirp till it's Charlie Brown's teacher. You got to do something about it as a player. And I've heard a lot about, and we've talked a lot about, and it all sounded awesome to start the year because it's always a bullet point you start August out with, is leadership and culture, culture and leadership. Well, it's going to be on full display one way or another Saturday night. It's going to be a situation where talk is cheap. Colton's got a T-shirt from his 80s movies days that, because it's one of the favorite 80s movies phrases, is talk is cheap. That's what it is. And it's time to go do something about it against a team that, let's be straight, is probably as wounded as you are. Who knows what, did you have Purdue marked down for a win or two wins in conference play? Me neither. But they're better than that. They played either extremely well, above their potential, or they're still being pointed and laughed at as, well, you're Purdue. We can show up and win. And they've almost bit some teams that are good this year, almost. Now they have taken those steps backwards because you lose to Rutgers, because you were feeling sorry for yourself that you didn't get things handled against Wisconsin. So is there a glue guy for Nebraska? And is this team so mentally fragile still from the last 3 weeks that they're going to crawl in the corner and go fetal position? Now, if Purdue all of a sudden finds an offense against your defense, that's on you. And if your offense can't respond and put some points up against an okay and an aggressive defense, that's also on you. But you are not that bad of a football team to have either of those things happen. Purdue's got to get tricky on offense to score. And Nebraska on defense needs to get a little more aggressive. On offense, just run the football. Do the play action. Set the tone here. And look like your team is out there caring versus going through the motions. Danny Langsdorf asked about kind of attitude, motivation, body language last night.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definite need for playing with heart and passion. That's a standard deal in football for sure. But I think there's got to be that goes with it is the execution and the assignments, details of the fundamentals and how to block a guy and how to align on a route and work against press and off. And I mean, there's so many details on every play for every position. There's definitely the want to factor, but comes what comes with that is the details. details of the assignments and each play.
Okay, so guys still want to be out there, according to him. Guys want to play hard. Guys want to do their thing. But you still have to go execute and have the fundamentals, knowing what hand to use, what step to take, what move to make, what play to run. And that's a question that has now entered the arena based on the Ohio State game, based on how Wisconsin did you, was the passion. And I got to see a couple of guys on each side of the ball be those glue guys. Here are my two names. Chris Weber, because his name's brought up a lot. Senior, linebacker, walk-on, Elkhorn dude. That's a great combination to me. Gets the program, cares about the program, loves the state, comes from a really good program. He's got to be that guy. He's healthy. You're in a storm. He's got to lead you out of it through play, but also through leadership. And I think a real problem in today's day and age of college football is guys are very reluctant to step on toes, to get in somebody's kitchen, to challenge somebody. They'd rather lead by example. And if that's the type of guy he is, that's fine. But guys need to follow his lead then. And on offense, the other guy that you point to that's always there in the good and in a lot of the bad is Tanner Lee. He's been even keel. He's been supportive. He said the right things. He said the right things Monday about wanting to be and do right for these coaches. They love these coaches. Well, you got to go play like you love these coaches Saturday night. And it's not like a Missouri situation back in 97. That was a very good Missouri team, but they'd reel off three straight. Colton's beloved Arizona State teams are trying for a third straight knockout upset. Great. That team's hot. You're not rolling into a team that's hot. You're rolling into a team that just beat Rutgers. So it's a monster response game. Where is Purdue going to go back to being Purdue? Or is Nebraska going to go back to being a shell of what they've seen themselves to be, as in your Nebraska football? That's what Saturday's about. And you got to have a guy like Tanner Lee and Chris Weber, whether they asked for it or not, be those guys who get the rest of the team rallied. And the coaches also got to be more hands-on with leadership and expectations and motivation. There's a number of guys that play for pride. There's a number of guys who really care, that want to win, that want to play for this coach and this coaching staff. But the guys that are kind of deciding or they're not as into it, either come along or stay home. And that's the message that needs to be delivered by your quarterback and your senior linebacker, by two of your captains. And will it be delivered the rest of this week? Think about Lee as well, is he is coming in playing probably his best football. And we have thoughts from Danny Langsdorf on that. Why is Tanner improved so much? Why has he changed? That's a good thing for Nebraska moving forward, because when push comes to shove, if your quarterback's at a high level, if he's getting time and help, then he can win a ball game for you, and he can win a ball game for you at night on the road.
Probably a comfort level. You know, I think he is doing a really good job of seeing the field and not trying to do too much, you know, trying to force the ball into tight windows. You know, I think probably a better job of recognizing coverage and just being more comfortable in what we're doing. You know, I think as you get more and more experience with plays and are able to repeat some things, then I think he's just got a better understanding, better idea of where to go with the ball versus different coverages. So I think that comes with experience for sure.
You know what? He's knocked the rust off. He's played well. That is good. Let's get to the phones. Nate's been hanging on. Nate, welcome into Hail Varsity. Go ahead, sir.
Chris, how are you, brother?
Good, man. How are you? You didn't blow away out there, did you?
Dude, it's been kind of crazy. I actually just got done remodeling my basement, and all the boxes for the furniture and the flooring I put down are all over my neighborhood. But it's okay. I've got teenagers. It's good training. So I want to kind of go big picture here. First, just as a point of observation, so during the last three coach searches, I was in Iraq. So while I read about it, I saw it. I wasn't there to feel it. This feels so weird and so different because it's kind of like you're banging and moving your girlfriend in while your wife is still living in your house and sleeping next to you every night. Was it like this for you as a media member with your finger on the pulse for the other searches as it is now? Because we're treating this like Riley's already gone.
I don't believe that he's gone. I don't believe a decision's been made. I believe there's a audition period for the next five games. That's why I think Saturday's so huge. I mean, and these guys got to kind of put up or shut up for him.
Now that's you, but the general consensus, I mean, every article and every paper.
No, I know.
Was it like that for the other ones? Because this seems really, really.
You got to think, though, it's almost 10 years ago for Bo. And Nate, thanks for the call. I'll expand on this here as I'm up against the clock.
Yeah, man.
People were ready to move Bill out. What did him in was Oklahoma State. They were ready to be done with that. For Frank, they thought they could do better. And they thought something better was out there, and it was an easy attraction. This, people love Riley. Not everybody, but they love his personality. So it's a bit harder.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Rick Pizzo coming up shortly after 5. It is Mitch Sherman time of ESPN.com and magazine at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, how you doing?
I am doing pretty well. A little road weary, but almost home for a few days, so that's good.
So you were down at Kansas and Missouri, the exhibition, correct? This last weekend?
I was at Kansas State, Oklahoma last weekend. I was at
Big 12 Media Days today for hoops, right?
Yes, Kansas, Missouri basketball on Sunday, and I was at Big 12 Media Day for men's basketball today, yes. I believe that was in Kansas City, although I'm not sure where I was, but it feels like it was Kansas City.
All right. Well, I'm going to go back to Nebraska for you as you make your way back.
Let's do it.
And your thoughts here on Saturday night's game against Purdue. You know, I had a couple of thoughts. One, I'm looking for a couple of glue guys on each side of the ball for Nebraska. Two, looking for, you know, Nebraska to have kind of a snap out of it game. Purdue's gotten better, but they're still not great. And I don't think Nebraska is as bad as they have played against two great opponents, but overall, just the tenor of this year, they're better than that, or they, at least on paper, should be. You still got to go do your job. You know, what does Saturday night mean to you, not only for Nebraska short term, but maybe as a barometer the rest of the season from a audition standpoint for the new AD?
Yeah, I don't think it means a lot long term. From that perspective, because I don't think that a victory by Nebraska fixes much of anything. It's better than losing, for sure. And a loss, you know, can take you further down the hole that you've already dug over the past couple of games. Purdue just lost at Rutgers. So despite the improvement that the Boilermakers have shown under Jeff Brohm this year, clearly this is not finished product,
sure,
or anywhere close to it, and the fact that Nebraska goes in as an underdog after losing in West Lafayette 2 years ago, I don't feel like there's a lot that is going to come out of this that can do great things for Mike Riley in the long term. In the short term, absolutely, you can fix some bad feelings around the team. I think you can boost morale. I think it would be extremely beneficial, goes without saying, for the players and the coaches who are on this quest this year to somehow right the ship to win at Purdue. That's a necessity, I think, at this point. So, you know, you need to take this in small steps if you're Mike Riley in Nebraska. Is there a way back to a point where the administration feels like something is salvageable? I don't know that you can answer that question after this week in a positive way. I think there could be a negative answer to that if Nebraska goes and plays poorly and loses to Purdue, but I don't know that you can get enough positive vibe from this game, even with a win, to be able to come close to answering that question yet.
I don't see Saturday, obviously, and I didn't mean it this way at all, as a job saver, but I'm saying for the bigger picture of you win one, maybe you put three together, and you play well against Penn State, and then you finish against Iowa, to make a case for yourself. That's kind of how I see Saturday as being pretty telling, as a way to snap out of it. And, yeah, I mean, it's Purdue. You're supposed to beat them, even though Vegas says no. As far as Nebraska fans are concerned, as far as your AD's concerned, your new AD's concerned, a team that just lost to Rutgers. So that's why I wanted to kind of get your thoughts here. And, no, you're right. I mean, it. I think in the short term it does fix, and maybe it leads to more fixes or more stability for the rest of this season. But you can't go hit rock bottom twice at Purdue. You're not supposed to do that as a program.
No, it's in no way what Nebraska stands for as a program. And even the naysayers who you know scoff at the suggestion that Nebraska fans have overextended expectations, that Nebraskans are living in the 90s. And, you know, I think some of that's been put to rest. I don't think that what Nebraska fans want this season is no one is striving for 1997 to come back right now. But regardless of that, the expectation is never going to be to the point where it's okay to lose to this Purdue team. I wouldn't say Purdue overall, because, you know, this is the school that produced Drew Brees. There may be again some Purdue teams that deserve the respect of everyone, and not to say that this team doesn't deserve your respect, but this is not the Purdue team that it's okay to lose to. If there is that Purdue team out there that exists, this is not it. Uh-huh. Not for this Nebraska team, not for any Nebraska team. So, you know, we've tossed this one around. I think people understand that you can't fix everything here. But you can definitely go. You can hit rock bottom again. I think the reality is that if people think Nebraska's at rock bottom after losses to Wisconsin and Ohio State, it can get worse with a loss to Purdue.
Mitch Sherman with us, CSPN.com and magazine at Mitch Sherman. Mitch, wanted to ask you about Tony Dungy's tweet that came out. I think it was last night or so. Maybe my timeline's off here, but it's recent. And his suggestion is that, you know, the Power Five schools missed out on a chance to hire Scott Frost 2 years ago. He's building something special, I'm paraphrasing, down at Central Florida. You've covered Frost back in college, and I've asked different folks who've been around him, do you think he's a guy that would wait another year before making a Power Five jump just because it's rolling down there?
If the opportunity's not right, if he doesn't feel that it's right, then yeah, I think he would. I think that there were opportunities that existed for Scott Frost that may have looked better on paper than Central Florida before he took that job. And he doesn't think necessarily like a lot of coaches out there. I think there are coaches who will jump to the Power Five at the first opportunity, and I'm not going to blame them for that. You go where you can go, where the prestige is, where the money might be the best. And I think there are different things that motivate Scott Frost than motivate other people. Is that good for Nebraska potentially if it ends up looking for a coach and targets Scott Frost? Only Scott Frost knows the answer to that question, because I've said this now a few times as this subject has become more and more hot button. But I can say with pretty good certainty that there was a time in Scott Frost's coaching career at the beginning of it where it was the ultimate goal for him to sit in that chair that was occupied by his mentor, Tom Osborne. And the question will, may now become, maybe we won't get to the point where we have to answer this question mm-hmm. this year, but the question may become, the day may be coming, does he still feel that way? And I don't know the answer to that, and I don't think many people do other than him. Mm-hmm. So, I could see him, if he feels the opportunity is not the perfect one, sticking it out at Central Florida. Not forever, but at least until the spot feels like a great fit for him. And we just don't know if Nebraska right now is that place.
Your thoughts on Iowa State, and I never thought I'd be asking you about Iowa State football, but man, Coach Campbell and the Hawkeyes are playing well. They could be undefeated. TCU comes to town. What's your early read on that ball game?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, because I'll be in Ames on Saturday.
I thought you might be headed that way, my friend.
Yeah, it's a ranked matchup. We've got number 25 Iowa State against number 4 TCU 3 days before the first playoff rankings come out. I mean, there's a lot of drama there. We're not going to get into the what-ifs with Iowa State. Iowa State's 5-2, and that's great. And they're trying to get bowl eligible this week. You don't go on the road and win at Oklahoma and Texas Tech in consecutive road games without being for real. I think what Matt Campbell's doing over there is legit, and they're doing it without their quarterback. I mean, this is a guy who has taken his players from a very low point at the beginning of last year to some pretty good heights, and they believe in what he's doing. I know Matt Campbell's from a writer coach place pretty well. Got to spend a good amount of time with him last year, the week before they blew out Texas Tech at home. And, I can say that this is something that I saw coming. Maybe not this dramatic, maybe not 5-2, certainly not a road win over Oklahoma with a quarterback that no one knew anything about. But the overall rise in the program, the way that those players were going to believe in what Campbell and his assistant coaches were selling, it was out there to be seen. So, good for them, and they've got the biggest home game at Jack Trice Stadium in a long time coming up in a few days.
Mitch, want to get you out of here on this. You're a huge baseball guy. On a scale of 1 to 10, your interest in the Dodgers, Astros, and I need a prediction.
Yeah, Dodgers in 5. I'm pretty interested. I saw the Dodgers in person this year right before the All-Star break against Kansas City at Dodger Stadium when I was out there on vacation. And I came away from 9 innings of baseball thinking that it was one of the best teams I'd ever seen in person. And they went on to lose whatever it was, 14 games in a row in September, or they would have had 110 wins during the regular season. So they're a complete team. They don't do anything wrong. And, Houston's a great story, not just the baseball team, but what's happened with that community and that team. But the Dodgers are too good. And Clayton, I saw them when Clayton Kershaw was hurt. To think that he's back. Justin Turner was hurt the day I was there, too. And they are, to take that losing streak out of the equation, they are really, really good. And I think they're going to roll in the next week.
I can't wait to see Kershaw tonight. It should be good. Mitch, love catching up with you. Awesome stuff. And thanks for a few minutes with us today on the show.
Yeah, thanks for letting me talk baseball. Take care, Chris.
Take care. There he is. Mitch says Dodgers in 5. Do that what you will with it. Thanks to Mitch Sherman. Good stuff at Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and magazine. And how about that? Ames readies for them Horned Frogs. Kind of interested in that one. Again, another afternoon game to keep your attention solely focused on Purdue, Nebraska. We'll spend a few more minutes talking some college football. Rick Pizzo, 20 minutes away. Hail Varsity Radio continues.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. 1 hour from now, Tuesday trivia with your friends from Applebee's, a chance at a $50 gift card. Good stuff from Mitch Sherman. And want to dive into kind of the climate in college football right now. We spent time on Jim McElwain's death threats and Jimbo Fisher's inviting a fan to come on down and say that to my face yesterday. Well, how about this reset culture and the entitlement that exists and causes a lot of change amongst blue bloods? Nebraska's part of that because many of you aren't extremely happy with how things are going now. And I'm going to point to Alabama here as the reason and the problem and the cause, okay? Because they've done a couple of things. One, going ahead of Electa here, they make you covet, okay? You see Alabama, you want to be Alabama, and let's just reload like Bama. And there's only one guy that is on this type of run. And it's Nick Saban and his process and his development. And he seems to be the dude. And he can lay out a list of really good coaches that do well and some great coaches that do well. But he's the guy, 9 times out of 10, that can go get a high-profile dude and make them play blue-collar versus entitled. He's about it because there's other guys and whatever culture he's got rocking down there in Tuscaloosa, it rubs off through his iron will, okay? So Bama's the problem because you see Bama, you want to be Bama, and you want your team. And I'm talking for most blue bloods out there. Two, Alabama was probably the first program that went rapid reset. Getting beat in Tecmo Bowl or Ken Griffey Jr. baseball, hit reset. Nothing happened. Nothing was saved. It was a simpler time. It was not down 4-0 to my little brother. They went through like 3 coaches post. I mean, they went through a couple of coaches post Bear Bryant. Then old Gene Stallings gets there and starts rocking and rolling before the NCAA said, not so fast, my friend. They won a national championship, okay? He kind of brought them back. And they beat Miami to do it. And then Gene retires. They have a couple of years, and then they get the old vacated treatment. Those damn envelopes of cash. And then they go through and cycle through 3 coaches, and finally they get Saban, because no one's listening to him at Miami and he wants to go back to college. That's it. They've started this whole recycle thing. You have fan bases now at Michigan, again, vocal minority, screaming at Harbaugh. Are you paying a boatload of money for a guy to be 6-5 since whacking Penn State? Yeah, but I look at Harbaugh, I look at his track record, and I look at what he has done and just live with being good, because if you piss him off, he's going to leave and go to the NFL. And then good will seem like a distant memory. If you let him be okay or good, or say he dips down to an 8-win season or whatever they're at, it's kind of the price of doing business here. In college football, again, unless you're Alabama, everybody is going to cycle down and it'll be cyclical. You're going to build up most programs, even blue bloods, you're going to build up and then drop off. I mean, Saban dropped off his second year. He went 10-3. He annihilated Michigan State. He lost to South Carolina. He lost to Georgia. He lost 3 SEC games that year. Wasn't happy. That has never happened again. But he's gone undefeated once in his championship runs, okay? Florida State, the same thing. I mean, Jimbo was probably real close to going back to LSU, where he was an assistant to Saban. And he stayed at Florida State. But you keep griping about him, he'll start looking. I mean, kind of be thankful for what you have and how quickly you've kind of come back as Florida State. You're not 7-5 anymore. I know you're bad this year. Not bad, but not what you were. You've been injured this year. Maybe this is the year he does make some changes on his staff a bit. But there's two fan bases right there that are going extreme when it comes to this reset mentality. And you're going to be good, as in 10 or 11 wins each year. And you have such a great chance to be up to a 13-win college football playoff appearance. Because you have guys that have already done it there. And Harbaugh will get his quarterback in. He'll get his culture set. He'll have great players, but he's just got to get them to fight and earn it a little bit. They have defense. They're incredible. They already get it, okay? And I know they got blown out, but Penn State's pretty special. James Franklin, another example. People were calling for his freaking backside a year ago. And what did the powers that be do? Kind of just chilled. Let it play itself out. Let it work its way up. Now you're number two in the country. And I'm not saying that that's the right or the wrong decision to do in Lincoln. What's on a lot of fans' minds. That's why I'm just so anxious to see Saturday night. Because, no, Purdue's not an opponent that you circle and brag about beating. I get it. That's fine. But I'm saying, can you take steps in the right direction? Like, it's going to get fixed. And it's a small step in the right direction for the Nebraska football program. When it comes to Michigan and Florida State and the minority fan base, the vocal minority fan base screaming that, well, we should look out. No, you're good. You've had a bad year. You'll have a chance to be a great program again if you don't hack off two legendary coaches that have won one and have rebuilt. Let's go to Gary real quick. Gary, thanks for hanging on. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, boy, Smitty, you're hitting the nail right on the head, man. Here's the problem is we have to, if you ask 30 fans what their expectations are of a program is, and not just Nebraska, any program.
It varies by age, doesn't it?
It really does. It really, absolutely it does. You look at, I think the younger people have no patience. The older people maybe are too patient, like me. Mm-hmm. Your age group, Smitty, I don't know. What's your age group think? What are you thinking, Smitty?
I'm thinking you should be around that 8, 9, 10 win number. You should play with passion and be in big games and win a number of them.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. You know, and I think the biggest complaint against Ohio...
Gary, we're up against it. Hang on for me.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Winding down this first hour, 10 minutes away, Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Network, Big Ten Buffet, get his take on the monster weekend of college football with Ohio State, Penn State, his take on Nebraska and Purdue. Good stuff from Mitch Sherman this hour. If you missed any part of the show, we invite you to the podcast. The ESPN Lincoln app has the podcast up. Of course, HailVarsity.com will take care of you with that, and iTunes. So, you know, you can do different things to motivate, and that's the biggest thing I'm looking forward to Saturday night, as it's a telling game. And Mitch Sherman's right. It's not a fix-it game, but it's a telling game for Nebraska when it comes to motivation. Do you give a damn anymore? Here's Urban Meyer. Different ways to motivate. He was asked this about revenge. You can play the disrespect card this weekend if you're Riley and, you know, you're underdogged. Bring Vegas into it, for the love of God. Cut 15 here. Urban on the revenge angle and Do you even need to bring that out against Penn State?
Throughout your career, have you found revenge to be a good motivating factor or indifferent to that sort of thing when you lose to a team the year before?
I've seen both. You know, and I have not, we haven't decided. You know, I kind of listen and watch. And sure, I think you're talking about 18, 19, 20-year-olds. Yeah, we've used that quite a bit. None of the times you move on.
Okay. I think he is pretty receptive to his team. That's what makes, I know you, many of you vehemently dislike Urban Meyer, but he's a dude who just gets it. He's a dude that is all over Osborne and loves what he did. Kind of tried to create a 2.0 version of his offense. It's physical. They play and are great. And I know he's hard to root for, but his image and coaching reference and reverence is in the right place with Coach Osborne. So we'll get caught up with Pizzo, his take on this Penn State-Ohio State showdown. More about Purdue-Nebraska next hour. More from Danny Langsdorf. We'll have that Applebee's Tuesday trivia coming up at 5:40. $50 gift card to Applebee's for you. That Thurston 10 special they got rocking on Monday, Thursday, Sundays when it comes to half-price apps and food and drink specials is incredible. You want to go kick it and watch some NFL. Loved watching Carson Wentz last night. I'm turning into an Eagles fan. I haven't had an NFL team for 100 years because Marino retired, and he went to go do movies with Snowflake the Dolphin and Jim Carrey. Okay? So I might be turning into an Eagles fan. How trendy am I? My kid's rubbing off on me. Real quick thought here from your friends at AgriGold. You might have noticed a different soybean sign in your neighbor's fields this year. That's right. It's AgriGold. Our customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct from the farm, the AgriGold way. The high expectations for every seed that go into the ground and our approach to soybeans, no different. High performance soybeans from a brand you already know. For more information, visit agrigold.com, 800-262-7333. Big Ten Buffet, get the plate, get lined up. It's Rick Pizzo next on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, hour two. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It's Tuesday. That means it's Big Ten Buffet time with Mr. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Network at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Rick, how you shaking, man? What's new?
Life is good, my friend. Still reeling from what I saw on Saturday night. Penn State blew me away with what they did offensively, and now we get ready for the biggest game maybe in the country this year in the regular season with Penn State, Ohio State on Saturday.
It is, and you've got, we'll get into a little college football playoff prediction too, but you know, what were you expecting with Penn State, Michigan, and obviously the offense we knew under Coach Moorhead's been very elite the last year and a half. But man, that was an incredible defense they lit up.
It was. I think Penn State used the bye week to perfection. They came up with some creative stuff that we hadn't seen before. Saquon Barkley taking direct snaps, scored on the first drive, and then on the second drive, they mix in a little bit of option. Barkley scores on a touchdown there as well. Michigan's defense looked a little rattled. First time we've seen that this year. You have to remember, this is a defense that had given up 3 rushing touchdowns all year, Chris, heading into that game. Penn State finds the end zone 5 times rushing the football. Offensively right now, they're such a juggernaut because if you try to key on just Barkley and McSorley, you see them chuck it up there to guys like Mike Gesicki, Deshaun Hamilton, Juwan Johnson's a big body. They have so many weapons offensively. I just don't know that there's any team in the country right now, save maybe Alabama, that has the kind of defense that could match up with that skill, size, and speed.
Well, and the question you had about Penn State going into this year, yeah, you knew that McSorley and Saquon were back. Godwin is gone, so Penn State got hot. They were really good towards the end of the year, and they won a ton of 50-50 balls. You didn't know if that could be replicated. You don't bank on those. I guess they do, and that's okay. That's kind of the missing element with their pass game, that you didn't know if it could be as good or better in year two. And they're lighting the Michigans of the world up. They've looked incredible. And touch on the job, because I know you've had a chance to speak with him. The job that Franklin's done, not only kind of accelerating this dream run Penn State's had, but also the rebuild. And O'Brien left him some good players and did a great job taking over. But Franklin's taken him to new heights, and I didn't think that was expected. A year ago, save 3 weeks, we were talking about Franklin's term at Penn State.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, the turnaround. I mean, if they lose that game to Minnesota midway through the year last year, yep, people are calling for his job. They find a way to win in overtime, and then they go on that amazing run. A couple of things happened. And Saquon Barkley transformed himself into a really good player, to maybe the best player in all of college football. Franklin has always been considered a great recruiter. That's starting to pay off. The sanctions were lifted and eased a little bit, and so the scholarships came back, and that helped with the depth on the offensive line. The missing ingredient last year, probably the addition of offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead and what he can do. Also can't discount what Brent Pry and this defensive staff has done. The defense of Penn State was not a given coming into this year. Now they lead the nation in scoring defense, haven't even given up 20 points once this year. You factor all those things together, I just think it's one of those years where the timing seems just right for a guy who now has his style of quarterback. You have to remember, he inherited Christian Hackenberg that did not fit his style at all. Trace McSorley is the quarterback that fits his style. And the last thing I'll say, Chris, is those 50-50 balls, they are designed as part of this offense because with those receivers and how high McSorley throws it, they may be 50-50 balls, but Penn State comes down to them 80% of the time, so you do the math.
That's a good score. That's a Rick Pizzo score right there. Rick Pizzo with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Let's talk about Ohio State, Penn State. What do you see happening in this one? Buckeyes just got out of Lincoln a couple of weeks ago. They looked incredible on both sides of the ball. That was them, and a part of that was Nebraska as well. That said, how do you see this thing shaken down? You got the revenge angle. You have Penn State at such a high level. You have the Buckeyes playing exceptionally well. I mean, they're just rolling people. Is the X factor here Ohio State secondary?
I actually don't think so. I think the X factor is JT Barrett. And you say, well, how can he be an X factor, right? He's an All-American. He's everybody's favorite Ohio State quarterback. Not. People still criticize him despite the numbers he's put up. But here are the numbers for JT Barrett. In three career games against top five opposition, that's Michigan last year, Clemson, of course, in the college football playoff, and Oklahoma this year, he has not thrown a single touchdown pass. And that's why he receives the criticism that he does. I believe four interceptions to go along with those zero TDs. So he has to actually play a game that is equal to the kind of records that he has set and the legacy that he'll leave at Ohio State, because he already has more total yards, already has more total touchdowns. All these numbers are well and good, but you were not the quarterback. It was Cardale Jones who led Ohio State to that 2014 national championship. You want to truly cement your legacy, beat a top five team, get your team back to the playoff where you have the potential to win a game in the playoff with you being the guy under center. Barrett has not played his best in the biggest games. It's that simple. Can he do it against one of the more underrated defenses in the country? I'm just not so sure he can.
You know, I'm looking at this, and I know we're talking Tuesday, but I think this is completely on Ohio State, and you're right about Barrett. You look at the downfield throws that he hasn't made against the great teams. That's been the issue. That's been the difference. Can he do it? His completion percentage isn't awesome. It's not even average when it comes to 20-yard pass plays downfield. And that's kind of the thing that needs to click for this Ohio State offense against the better teams. When they've been able to take the top off, everything else kind of falls into suit. Can he beat them and keep them in it throwing the ball? And that's kind of the same question we've talked about in these big games, Rick.
And the question also has to be posed to the play calling, because you can go back to the game that they lost to Michigan State at home in that monsoon of a couple seasons ago when the play calling was really poor, and Michigan State went in there with a pair of backup quarterbacks and beat Ohio State. And sometimes I think when you get into these really big games, and I think it happened with Oklahoma as well, and Barrett starts to struggle, the play calling gets really conservative. And when the opposing defense knows what you're going to do and feels like your quarterback can't beat them downfield with stretch plays, they can cheat. That's what Oklahoma did. That's what Clemson did early. I think that's what Penn State is going to do. As crazy as it sounds, Chris, I think Penn State is going to line up defensively and say, okay, we're going to take away J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber. We're going to take away these little short, teeny screen passes that you're trying to throw to Paris Campbell and Johnny Dixon. If you get 4 and 5, that's fine. We'll let you dink and dunk us. We are not going to let you get 25 yards after catch. You're going to have to beat us by throwing the football down the field, because Penn State is supremely confident in their back four. Amani Oruwariye is a defensive back that nobody talks about, who has wonderful ball skills, great cover guy. Marcus Allen can lay the wood. He is so assignment sound at safety. I just feel like this is a really tough matchup for Ohio State's offense against the Penn State D, which seems to answer every question that Ohio State has provided to the last couple opponents.
Well, and also, too, you can maybe gamble a bit, not be reckless, mind you, but you have that offense to pick you up. I mean, Penn State's offense really isn't fearing anybody at this point, are they?
No, absolutely not. And I think you make a great point. You can gamble on both sides of the football. I think you can gamble a little offensively as well. Look what happened last year with Penn State. When they're down 28-7 against Wisconsin, everybody in the world is saying there's no way that you can come back against a Wisconsin team because they are so solid and they are so fundamental. That's exactly what Penn State can do. They can take shots downfield. They can gamble. They can throw those 50-50 balls because they're so confident. And now they have a defense that they believe, if that offense makes a mistake, can either limit the opposing team to a field goal, even if they get great field position, or go ahead and get the ball back. I mean, they sacked Michigan 7 times, 6 in the second half. They are stout up front, and they will provide the ultimate challenge for Ohio State's offensive line, which at times this year has not been great.
We want to switch gears, and we'll get a playoff thought from you and also a Big Ten West thought in a second. Your take on what Nebraska's walking into with Coach Brohm and Purdue, kind of an inexplicable loss for them last week against Rutgers. They've played everybody and some great teams very well. How's this turnaround happened, and what happened Saturday night on BTN?
Well, you know, Jeff Brohm said it best. They've taken a lot of steps forward. That was 2 steps back. Their quarterbacks did not play well. He continues to have to ride with 2 guys because neither Elijah Singalardi nor David Blau has grabbed up and taken that job, despite the fact that they've been given multiple opportunities to do exactly that. They're not a deep team. They're not a remarkably talented team. They're going to lose some games, but he has still done a really nice job. To me, the more interesting storyline in this game surrounds Nebraska and Mike Riley, because a lot of folks thought a change might be made during the bye week, because it's an easy time for it to happen, right? You lose 2 tough games, Wisconsin pulls away in the 4th, Ohio State blows you away, and then there's a week off. I actually think this is the more telling week, because you can make excuses and you can point at all the reasons why Wisconsin and Ohio State are not winnable games. This is a winnable football game. Here's a team that just lost to Rutgers. You're coming off a bye week in which you've had a couple of weeks to scout, to self-scout, to scout Purdue, to install new things, to convince your team that there is something to play for the rest of the year. If the body language is not right, if the care factor is not off the charts this week for Nebraska, then that is the telltale sign that things in that locker room have gone bad. I think this game, maybe more so than any other game on the schedule this year, is the most important game to circle right now, not just because it's this weekend, but because I think it signifies what the future will most likely hold for Nebraska over the next 5 to 6 weeks.
I think you're absolutely right. You get Purdue, you get a win up there, and maybe you put a run together aside from the trip to Happy Valley. Now, I will say this. You get Penn State at the end of an incredible schedule, getting way, way, way ahead of ourselves here. When you have Ohio State, they just had Michigan, they get Sparty, and then Lincoln, or then Nebraska comes to town. So Nebraska's at the point right now where teams may be overlooking them because they haven't performed so well. And, you know, whatever. Crazier things have happened. And, yeah, I mean, this is the week. This is the week where the guys go out and play and get a win for the coach and they still, you know, give a damn. Or, you know what, everyone's just kind of checked out and packed it in. College football playoff, Rick, your thoughts here on Georgia and Notre Dame and where the Big Ten is at. Is the Big Ten in any danger as we talk here and now of being left out? And I ask that because of Wisconsin's non-conference, as good as they are, and I think they're very good, and say Penn State gets tripped up and then you have a one-loss Big Ten team, say you have a one-loss Georgia team just to Bama, so does the SEC get two in? Does Notre Dame, if they run the table with this schedule, don't think they will, but if they do, who's left out right now?
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly scenarios in which it could happen, but I think almost all those scenarios require two things to happen. For TCU to run the table, and TCU still has to play Oklahoma late in the year. It'll be a really tough game. There's a Big 12 championship game, remember, this year as well. So that could go actually against the Big 12 after all that conversation about how not having a championship game hurt them in the past. And Notre Dame also would have to run the table. In that scenario, is there a possibility if Penn State loses to Ohio State and then whoever it is that goes to the Big 10 championship game beats Wisconsin, then is there the possibility? Yes, because you could certainly make the argument that Wisconsin's schedule is not strong enough. It's not their fault. I mean, who knew BYU was going to be awful? Who knew the West was going to have basically no ranked teams other than Wisconsin all year long? And Michigan is on a downward trend, and they don't play Penn State and Ohio State in crossovers this year. So there's nothing you can do about that. I mean, obviously a 13-0 Wisconsin team is in without a doubt, but a 12-1 team could potentially be left out if they lose that game. I do think, though, that a one-loss conference champ from the East in the Big Ten is in. If Penn State or Ohio State loses one game, and Ohio State's obviously would be to Oklahoma, if Penn State were to lose to Ohio State but then run the table and somehow still get into the championship game and beat an unbeaten Wisconsin team, I think a one-loss Big Ten East Division champ is 100% in the playoff. It's just if it happens the other way and all those dominoes fall. I think right now if there's a conference that we could say is out as of today, and the Pac-12 has done nothing. I mean, USC's loss, Washington State's loss is damning. Washington's loss is damning. They play each other late in the year. I think the Pac-12 will be the league that's on the outside looking in.
Rick, about 45 seconds at BTN. Rick Pizzo, a thought on who finishes behind Wisconsin in the West?
Well, you put Wisconsin first. You put Illinois 7th, and then what you do is you take 2 through 6, you write them down on a piece of paper, you put them in your baseball cap, you throw them up in the air, and whichever piece of paper ends up in your hand, that's your second place seed.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. I'm surprised. I know it's a rivalry game, but Iowa's played really well this year, and then to lose like that in overtime, Iowa was looking good against what they did on the road at Sparty right after that tough loss against Penn State. Man, but they're reeling a bit right now too. Their O-line's been ineffective at times with the inside run.
Yeah, Floyd of Rosedale, loser this week, falls to 4-4 with the remaining schedules for Minnesota, Iowa. The loser of that game could be sitting home for the holidays, no bowl game.
Rick, you be good. Thanks so much. Always love catching up.
Dude, it's my pleasure as always, man. Lots of fun.
That doesn't make you sad that one more Iowa loss and they're home for the holidays. You know, they're good enough to be in a bowl game. We'll see how it shakes out for Iowa. Drinking and driving, not a good call. If you're out tonight or this weekend, make plans to get that sober ride home. A DWI could cost you $12,000 in fines and fees and jail time. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation at Highway Safety Office.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Got an open phone segment for you. This segment and next segment is the Applebee's Tuesday Trivia. We got to figure out what's up for trivia. Big thanks to Rick Pizzo, and Rick thought that Saturday, pretty telling week for Nebraska football. Do you agree with that when it comes to the barometer of the rest of the season? And Mitch Sherman nailed it when we were talking about, you know, the magnitude of, dare I say it, Purdue, Nebraska. It is it's an important game. It's the next game. A win doesn't fix much, but man, a loss can take you further down that hole. Can tap the line, Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. And here's what I believe right now. You've had the bye week. You've had 2 weeks to get this out of your system. You've had a chance to kind of refocus. We started the show off talking about who are your glue guys, or who's your glue guy on each side of the ball. Do you get that type of leadership and vocal challenge from your quarterback and your senior linebacker? And the two guys that have come to my mind pop up, Weber and Tanner Lee. Those are the guys that, those are my candidates to bring everybody along. And from a frailty standpoint, it can't still be a question, but it is with this football team. Did Ohio State and Wisconsin, did they annihilate you for the rest of the season? Or is that a 2 week dance with two top fives and two playoff pretenders or contenders? And it needs to be flushed and talked about that way if you're inside that locker room. But you also got to step forward a bit. And one way to do that is to figure out where you're going on offense. And let's check out cut eight here. One way to do that's through the run game, and another way to do that's through getting a back on a linebacker with the check down, when we just kind of shift to the offense for Nebraska football.
Giving him more work, getting him more and more different plays that he's comfortable with. You know, we don't want to overload him with it being a true freshman, but I think he is deserving of some more work, you know, with Trey's situation being what it is. I think he's shown some signs of really being a talented runner, an all-around player, a good receiver out of the backfield. He's tough, blocks well. He's kind of that all-around type that Trey is, you know, he's similar to Trey that way. And so I think that giving him some more work and featuring him a little bit more on some series is good.
I took a breath there. Came up for air. Jalen Bradley's who I was talking about. And when it comes to the running game rotation, man, I need some of those questions answered. Like, in full detail. I need answers as to what's your game plan with the running back? What's your usage like for the running back? And is it that hard to make a call? And do you feel obligated to use Bradley? Because you've burnt his red shirt, and he's seen 9 carries, 8 carries, however many carries. Well, let's get him in since, you know, we've hosed his freshman season through non-use. Listen, your answer is real simple in the form of Ozigbo with how you're going to go against an attacking defense. They are licking their chops for you to turn into Air Danny and throw the football like you're down 17-0. You're going to have maybe some new spots on the line. Farniok in for Farmer. We'll see how it plays out. But you're consciously making the decision, and I know Farmer's had his struggles. He's also had some moments, too, of really good play, safety aside, where you're going to have a one-handed dude at guard. in Farniok. Maybe he's more athletic. Maybe he allows you to do more screen game. Maybe you just line up and run at an attacking defense. Now, Purdue's really good with run blitzes, and Purdue's really good at coming off the edge. And Nebraska's offensive line has been better at protection, but not finishing drives or getting points. So we'll see. Let's go to the phone lines. Bill's been on hold. Bill, welcome into Hail Varsity. Thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So I was kind of listening to what you were saying, and when you talked about a one-armed offensive lineman, it kind of reminded me of my honeymoon, but we're not going to go into that. So I was kind of wondering, if we should lose to Purdue, do you believe that we're going to be in a position where we might actually get to see that O'Brien kid? Because at that point in time, none of these readjusted goals that keep getting shifted down will be attainable. And I'll just hang up and let you answer that. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, Bill. I don't know if that was Bill's fake Southern accent or real Southern accent. You lose to Purdue, your season's done. Okay? It's that simple. Not in its entirety. You still have other games to play. But you will have lost this fan base. And there's some hanging on. There's some, fighting the good fight. But you all have lost most of this fan base. You'll need to give tickets away to Northwestern. And if it's 20 and awful at 3 o'clock on Black Friday, I mean, it might be friends and relatives. I'm exaggerating, of course. But you lose to Purdue in any form, it's over. Done. Period. I'm maybe being too dramatic, but I don't think so. Really don't think so. That's how, I mean, really? Is it insane to circle a tipping point on a guy's 40-plus year career? Is the tipping point game going to come down to Seabass and the Boilermakers? Yeah. I'm not saying that the athletic director is going to observe, evaluate, do all that stuff. But his first impression ain't good. Place empty and out. 56-14. The scared look in your eyes as a team. It's brutal. And it comes down to motivation. 466-377-6800-825-5865. Well, one way you get things handled is the offensive line. More on that one-armed or one-handed offensive lineman, Farniok, what Nebraska is going to do with this and where he can go. He spoke Monday. And Langsdorf kind of spent some time as they've been looking at him at that right guard spot.
Yeah, you're seeing a little more Matt Farniok in there. With his he's coming off that injury and getting more comfortable playing. I think just the constant work with that group and working as one. That's so much about that line as those five really gelling and coming together helps the communication and so much of the being on the same page up front, both run in the run game and in protection. I think just the more we can find that front that final five and stay with it. And I think you've seen some good work from that group at times and at times been a little bit inconsistent. So we are playing Matt in there a little bit more and we're going to look at that next few days.
And I'm all for playing the best dude, and maybe Farniok's come a long way and he'll help the right side of the line. I mean, they're the professionals, they're the coaches, but I just have a hard time shaking things up. Has your line been the problem or has it been the execution? I mean, the line's not been great. I understand that in the run game. But is it wise at this juncture to go make a change at right guard? Will it be better? That's the hope than Farmer. Will it be worse? It could be if he's got one paw wrapped up because there's a busted, you know, busted bone. Jim's with us on Hail Varsity. Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, you know, it just seems to me like, darn it, the kids are getting blamed for a lot of things. But if you back up a ways, and I'm sure you've heard as much as I have, but and I'm an old guy, but that athletic department's been messed up for a number of years. And I don't think it's who you get as a guide when you go fishing to tell you what bait to use, you know, as much as these guys are plucking, you know, 3- and 4-star kids. It starts from the top, just like running a business. And that business hasn't been run very good for a long, long time. So I get a little disappointed with hearing, you know, that this kid ain't blocking well and this kid ain't doing that and this kid isn't doing that. But I think if you go back and look, Schmitty, it started a long time ago, and it started in the department more so than it did with the kids.
Well, Bill, hang on a second. My question about that is, do you make a change at this point in the year with a guy who's got a cast on at the right guard spot? That's my question.
Oh, no, no. I'm not, you know, I'm going a lot more overall than
okay,
that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
No, gotcha.
Yeah,
that's my question.
It doesn't have anything to do with who's playing Saturday.
No, I gotcha. No, the kids got to go out and perform, and they got to be motivated. Bill, thanks for the call. They got to be motivated by the coaches. And taught and coached up by the coaches, but you got to have the right decision makers in there. And absolutely, you've had a freaking mess post Osborne, both post Osbournes. It's just what it is. I mean, and Bill alluded to, you know, the guys who are, air quotes, supposed to be running the business, not, of course, speaking of the Moose, because he just got here, and you know what? He's got a pretty good track record. We'll see how things shake for him. But, man, I mean, it's been a mess, absolutely. And, you know, I just look at the offensive line that's the key to this, with your quarterback, with your O-line, with your wideouts, with the whole part of things. Scoring more points. Scoring points against an aggressive team that can die by the blitz. And I like Farniak. I think he's really talented. I just know he's got a cast on. Applebee's Tuesday Trivia on the way.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
It is that time for Applebee's Tuesday Trivia shortly. First, though, let's go to John, as he's dialing up the Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House hotline. John, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
I spoke with the new athletic director last night for about 5 minutes on the radio, and I threw a bunch of...
You're the popcorn guy.
Yeah, I'm the popcorn guy.
Of all the questions you asked him about popcorn.
Well, no, that was the end. I basically started off, you know, and I just basically, he was talking about the quality of the Big Ten, and I said that we had a tough time getting in there, and once we got in there, we sort of let the Big Ten chancellors down because Perlman sort of misled them about the AAU, and he really didn't understand, and I had to say, no, it's not amateur athlete, it's an academic thing. Mm. But, you know, I guess my major thing is I was trying to be a little lighthearted at the end, but, you know, I asked him about the selling of the suits and stuff like this, and he just sort of avoided that, you know, and I just think he's just going to, oh, I did mention to him that I thought it would be really nice at some of these venues besides football and basketball that he would go there and set up a table where people could come down and sit down and talk to him or stand, so he could get to know the fans and what they're really feeling, you know, not just the guys with the big bucks in their pocket.
And John, thanks for the call, bud. I'll tell you this. The fans will no doubt be able to connect or contact, make contact with him. He's personable. He's going to chat. Now, putting a card table up, and having him shake hands and kiss babies while he's supposed to be there supporting an athlete and watching. Don't know that he's down with it. He's going to be at soccer tomorrow night, I think. He's going to be with us Thursday. So which should be cool. Yeah, so thanks, John, for getting the popcorn thing handled. All right, let's dial it up. Let's light it up. 466-3776. 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Tuesday trivia with Applebee's. Tuesdays, how about it? And Thursdays, 50-cent boneless, 55-cent bone-in wings all day. High five that, of course, till 6 o'clock, half price apps. 2-for-20 menu, dine in or call ahead for Carside to go. It's real easy to do. Mondays are Burger Mondays, $6.99 classic burgers. Wednesdays, 99-cent kids meals. You got to be there with your kid, and your kid's got to order it. Don't worry, I've thought of all options and avenues, but be there with your own child. And don't forget Thurston 10. Monday, Thursday, Sundays for dine-in, $6 margaritas, $3 field goal Coors Light or Miller Lights, and then the $2 kamikazes. Let's get this thing fired up with Tuesday trivia. Purdue 55, Nebraska 45. I'm not asking how much Crown Goose or captain you had. Don't want to know. Not going to judge. What I do need to know, how many rushing yards Nebraska had against Purdue in 2015? I need rushing yards and I need passing attempts. It's a two-part question. Thornton Mellon, who's up first? Really? He's trying for a hat trick? Tom, go ahead.
Hey, thanks a lot. Rushing yards, 123.
You are incorrect. Try next week, Tom. Love you much. Thanks for trying. 466-377-6800, 825-5865, or 466-3776. Tuesday trivia with Applebee's, $50 gift card. Passing attempts Nebraska had against Purdue. That was Riker's start. How many passing attempts did Nebraska have against Purdue? How many rushing yards did Nebraska have? You get those questions right, it is a $50 gift card. Is that Brent? All right. Brent, welcome in. Go ahead.
All right. I did 77 rushing yards and 48 passing attempts.
Yes, sir. What a brilliant game plan. Thank you for calling. Hang on the line, Brent, as Colton will take your info down and get you that $50 gift card. That was quick. Those are numbers kind of burned into your mind, like 408 or maybe that Kansas score the first time Cali lost down in Lawrence. It was a 45-17. Man. 48 passing attempts, 77 rushing yards. And then this is the kicker. Five turnovers. You go minus five. Yeah, no good. Okay. We'll get into a little World Series talk, unless you want to keep talking Nebraska football. We can do that. How geeked are you for the World Series tonight? It'll be getting rocking here at 6 on many of our Hail Varsity affiliates. And got a couple of 100-win teams. 29 years since Gibby cranked one off the eck at Chavez Ravine. I mean, it's just the eighth time two 100-win teams are hooking up here. I've got to be honest with you, and being a guy who's liked the Red Sox, my son loves the Yankees, so I can stomach Judge and Gregorius and Chapman. All right, I just can. I don't hate the Yankees like I used to. I'm getting old and soft, apparently. So I was kind of hoping for New York and L.A. That would have been incredible. Don't get it. But when you look at this breakdown here of the World Series, and Mitch Sherman is the beacon of knowledge here, going the Dodgers in five. Here's my question here. Are you buying that the whole Kershaw narrative is over, is done, that his postseason woes are finished? I know he's 2-0 this year in the postseason, 2-0 in three starts this October. The incredible against the Cubs in that clincher. But does it translate from the NLCS to the series? And he's been just not Kershaw in the postseason. I mean, listen, Greg Maddux was awful in the postseason too. But would you put all of your finances that Kershaw's fixed? And I love him. I want to watch him tonight. I can't wait. I mean, think about this. I'm going to just hack off Dodger fan out there. Think if Kershaw just gets lit up tonight, and then the guy I would wager all of my allowance money on is Verlander, because that dude's proven he's incredible this postseason. And he, think about giving Houston a chance to be up 2-0. That said, Mitch might be onto something. Dodgers in five.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
This team's special. I just think the care factor with all the guys. You know, I think, you want to compete. You want to play well for the guy next to you. I think that we have that next up mentality a lot. You saw that whole series with the Chicago and really all season.
Kershaw, ready to rock tonight. Again, Verlander, why I'm watching. Kershaw, why I'm watching this series. But how about, drum roll, por favor, Yasiel Puig? Huh? Remember what type of just sick talent he is and what he wants to be and can be, and just what type of psycho he is as well? I mean, think if he hits one out tonight. Is homeboy going to flip the bat over over the protective netting behind home plate where the guys with the radar gun that look like a 50s-style mafia guy with the fedora and the sport coat are taking radar readings? I mean, are they going to yell incoming because Puig chucks the bat flip? I mean, this wasn't me. Okay, maybe you had a friend like this in school, but there are those that are gifted, extremely brilliant in school, and they are bored out of their mind. They're like Good Will Hunting smart, okay? They're bored out of their mind with normal class stuff. So they just jack around. They don't try. That's kind of like Puig in parts of his career. But now that, I mean, it's the eyes of the world are watching, he's a dude who loves the spotlight. And he's risen to the occasion. 12 hits this postseason. His on-base percentage through 8 games is .514. Pretty impressive. He is focused. Darwin wants to check in. All right. Squeeze him in. Darwin, you got about 90 seconds. Bud, go ahead. You want to talk about the offense?
Yeah, I sure would. I believe they're too predictable.
Okay.
For one thing, they don't run enough different plays. And I'd really like to see them rough up Purdue. And
just go take someone's head off?
Yeah, I think they need to load up the backfield with a couple blockers. And I think they just need to play smash mouth, that will give the offensive line some confidence.
No worries, Darwin. You know what? We're on the same page where a heavy dose of Ziggy running the football with McNitt leading the way, and then maybe you find a tight end down the seam for a touchdown.
Yeah, or a pulling guard to help block for the big boy.
Sure, yeah. No, I think we're on the same page, Darwin. I think this thing, and Colton looked me in the eye and says, dude, they should go beat Purdue by 30. And he's right.
Yeah.
I mean, part of me is too old school to deviate off of that thought process.
I think they could do it without throwing a pass if they really set their mind to it. That will give them consistency and the offense. They'll believe in themselves.
Darwin,
the front line.
Appreciate you tuning in, my man. Thanks for calling.
You bet.
All right. Yeah, we'll spend some more time gearing up towards Purdue. Brad Edwards tomorrow. Shuey tomorrow. And we'll talk to you tomorrow at 4. Thanks.